Hi, this is Adam Carolla. I want to thank you for supporting this podcast on the Carolla Digital Network. Everyone here at Carolla Digital is very proud of the shows that we put out every week and are excited about the future of our network. However, a patent troll is threatening that future by suing us. We need to fight back and beat the troll down. If we go down, all the other shows on the other networks you've grown to love are going to go down next. Visit fundanything.com/patent troll to donate and find out other ways that you can help beat the patent trolls. Thank you and mahalo.
Buying a car can be a stressful experience, but TrueCar is changing car buying forever. Yes, TrueCar helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Last month, over 45,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network and TrueCar.com. Users save an average of $3,046 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com and find out what other people paid for the car you're looking for. Then, register at TrueCar.com to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. And the third step is simple. Just print out your TrueCar savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. Every day, TrueCar.com users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
This is Carolla Digital.
Welcome, Dr. Drew Podcast. A couple of promo notes before I introduce my guest. Those Swingin' Sounds are available to you now in part two of the Swingin' Sounds, the LP. That's part one there we're listening to, right, Gary? Gary. Chris? Yes.
Yes, this is part one.
Part three underway.
Yeah, it's coming soon.
Russell and Chris have been doing a good job, right? All right, appreciate
yeah,
that.
It's coming out real soon.
It's a lot of fun. It'll create an environment for you all, so please do get that at iTunes. Also, more importantly, help Adam fight the patent trolls. Fundanything.com/patent troll to contribute. They're about a third of the way where they need to be in order to fight this thing off. But if these guys win, podcasting is in trouble for everybody. They are going to unravel podcasting. And, of course, they pick the guy with the intermediate success. They don't go after Amazon. They don't go after iTunes because those guys have too much firepower. They don't go to the guys that aren't making any income because they don't want – there's no money for them to get. They go for the guy in the middle, which is Adam. And that will make this – he's on the record saying he will stop podcasting if they win. And I dare say most people will. Please don't forget, you got to support those people that support us. So support the sponsors and also click through the Amazon link at drdrew.com. Now, on to the business at hand. It is my privilege to introduce someone who I've admired for many years. Adam has, I don't know if he's ever gushed at you, but he's more than admired you. He's sort of idolized you long before you guys ever met. Dennis Prager. He and I will have a show this Saturday, May 31st, 8 p.m. at the Canyon Grill in Burbank. Tickets and info at drdrew.com. And if you use the promo code, these podcasts, our podcast users that use the code Drew25, that's all one block, Drew, D-R-E-W-25, with the numbers 25, you get a 25% discount on the tickets for the event this Saturday. Dennis Prager, obviously at DennisPrager.com. You can listen to his show. What are the hours from?
On the West Coast, 9 to noon, East Coast, 12 to 3. And
check your local listings.
Yeah.
It must be online too, no?
Oh, it's definitely online.
So
it's online. It's on iPod. It's on Android. It's on steroid. It's on asteroid.
It's on everything. Clouds.
It's on everything, exactly.
And Dennis has the PragerUniversity.com website. It's an online nonprofit organization, 5-minute video courses on many subjects.
Right.
I am such a fan of these sorts of available units of information, let's call it, almost meme-like bits. I spend so much time on iTunes U. I don't know what I would do without it. So it sort of scares me to think if we didn't have – I guess I'd read more probably. But I do it while I work out.
Well, we do the reading for you and because there's too much to read. I love reading.
Yeah, me too.
But there is too much in the, and it's a gift. I'm not saying this is a – it's a problem, but it's not out of a bad thing. It's a good thing. There are really many good books. But it's not possible for any human being to digest them. So something like Prager University does the digesting for you, and then we have some of the really clearest minds offer this with very, very modern graphics to illustrate their five-minute course.
Have you ever checked out Khan Academy?
Yes.
It's similar to that, it sounds like.
Yeah, though I don't, they do it in 5 minutes.
3 minutes, I think.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are there solely to educate. So are we, but we will tackle things that they won't.
I'm sure.
Philosophic way, like, are people born basically good? All right, which I think is the single most important question other than whether there's a God. I think that I learned. I've been broadcasting. By the way, it's an honor to be on your show.
It's a privilege to have you.
No, well, thank you. I just want to say that, okay, because you're a legend in our time and deservedly. But 32 years broadcasting, and I have understood what it is that people think, and the first revelation was that the reason people think, and I'm not going to politicize anything,
okay.
The greatest single division between liberal thought and conservative thought emanates from whether you think people are basically good.
I completely agree. Adam and I have talked about this at length. And you're not telling me which, but I'm going to put my money down that conservatives think people are good and should be left alone to be good.
Oh, that's so interesting. Go on. No, no. Right.
And liberals need to regulate people because they're bad.
Oh, in practice, this is the – it's – oh, God, you don't know what you've just given me another show, which is, as you probably know, is worth its weight in gold.
Yes,
a great subject for a show. Man, are you kidding? I would go naked in the Arctic for it. But what you just said in practice is what happens. But in theory, it's the liberal thinks people are basically good. And I'll give you the proof in a moment. And
well, they'll say it. They'll think they're saying that, but then they won't put their action where they're...
Oh, well, that's a very – it's a very intelligent point. But there was an answer that the founders gave. But let me just explain why. The liberal will say if there's, let's say, a poor person or an inner city person commits a violent crime. All right, and I never – like to use euphemisms. A poor black guy commits a violent crime, okay? And the liberal will say, oh, he did it. That's always a he. So.
Well, men are more violent.
Exactly, which is fine. You're allowed to say, and then you're not called a sexist.
Right.
But if you say anything about women, then you're a misogynist. It's very. That's another issue. But anyway, so he commits the crime. The liberal will say it was racism and poverty. And the conservative will say, no, it was a guy without a conscience.
Hmm.
So that's the reason. In other words, the liberal will blame outside forces for evil.
Yeah.
The conservative will blame the individual.
Uh-huh.
That's why it's such an important question.
I believe you're right when you say that. I'm trying to interpret it because fundamentally when people take these positions, I believe they expose something about how they feel about themselves. In other words, if they're fearful of their own aggression or fearful of their own...
So they're in denial. See, I know there are a lot of rotten parts to me. I mean, I made peace with that very early... No, really, and I had to. I'm writing my autobiography, and I'm dealing with... I can't believe, these are open shows. So, I realized in high school... some of my fantasies were not exactly let's walk along the seashore as the sun sets.
Are you saying that young males have bizarre sexual fantasies? How dare you? I've never heard such a thing.
I'm not saying bizarre.
Say good day, sir.
I'm saying
intense,
ignoble.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
And not at all bizarre.
Fair enough.
Because we all have them.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. But yes, I think you're right. I think it. That's why, ironically. Although I differ with him on religion. I think Freud was the genius of the 20th century. I thought time should have put him and not Einstein as the man of the century.
Yeah. I think he got himself into too much trouble. Well, I don't want to get into that because that's a gigantic topic.
Yeah,
it's the weeds. Yes. But I agree with you. Just the fundamental insight that we have motivational systems that are outside of our consciousness is the most important thing possible for humans to understand.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do believe, back to this, are we good or are we bad, that I, for instance, don't necessarily believe that – Adam agrees with me on this – that you have to have a religious system in order to be good, that people can have a moral compass that is inherent in a healthy person. However, as a matter of practice, I've noticed that a lot of people do seem to need something on top to help them struggle with some of their impulses.
I'm on that side, and I'll tell you, even though if somebody said, well, if you were Dennis, would you become a murderer if you knew God didn't exist? No, I wouldn't become a murderer.
Right.
But I think I think that society would sink.
Because masses might.
Well, but even non-masses. Look, I was so raised with God wants me to be good that I can't entirely divorce that from I don't know where the separating line is, but I'll give you an example. I've always quote unquote interviewed people. I don't mean on radio. I love when I meet strangers.
You probe them.
I have no interest in talking about me.
Yeah.
I probe them. Yeah. I know all about me. Yeah. I want to know them.
Yeah.
So I remember a guy I was getting friendly with. We worked at a educational institution. He was a former Marine, a good guy, and not a religious guy. And I asked him when I felt I could, and with men, you can usually ask this within 10 minutes. Have you always been faithful to your wife? Mm. Guys, believe it or not, will open up to you unless they think you're asking for a nefarious reason.
Yeah, or you're going to talk to somebody.
Yeah, exactly, which is nefarious.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but he knew I wouldn't. I mean, I'm talking about it on your podcast, yes. But nobody knows who it is.
Yeah.
Exactly, and this is a long time ago. And I was not married, and I was curious about marriage. So I said, so tell me, we'll call him Bob. So tell me, Bob, have you always been faithful with your wife? And he said, Dennis, let me tell you something. I'm not a religious guy, and I've certainly had opportunities. He was a good-looking guy. He's well-spoken. Said, and I've had opportunities and certainly desires. But I know you're going to laugh, Dennis, but believe it or not, I really think there's a God who gave 10 commandments and said, do not commit adultery, and that's what stopped me. I'm afraid of the consequences, and it's some divine system. The guy never went to synagogue, never went to church, nothing.
It was an important bridle.
But and I believe that does play an extra role. I think if we are able to fool our conscience. It's called rationalization.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Everybody does it. Nobody will know about it. 100 things. But if you do think that there's a God who knows what you do, I can't believe that doesn't help.
I'm just thinking about how my own mind works. And there's sort of two kinds of people in the world. There are people that experience themselves first through other and then self, and people have self and then other. And ultimately, it gets a little mushy that we all have sort of self-other complexes. I'm sort of in the Martin Buber school of spirituality myself. And I know that I could never cheat because it would be harmful to my wife and children. It would hurt the people I love the most, even if they never knew about it. I know for sure it would diminish the primary intimacies. It just does. That's how we work as humans. So knowledge sometimes, if you really know it and you've seen it experientially, you've seen the consequences in other relationships, sometimes knowledge can be as good as those religious overtones, no?
Well, the operative word is sometimes.
Right. So, well, I was saying because I experience so much through the other that to hurt another, I'd rather hurt myself.
Right.
And so that's how I'm constructed. If I wasn't constructed that way, you're right.
Right. I believe you, and I believe it works for you.
Yeah.
I don't believe it would work for most people. And it's not, this is no holier than thou about people. I think that when I was in high school, most of the kids in my high school class cheated on tests. Hmm. I didn't. And in fact, I led a campaign against cheating. Hmm. It was my first moral mission, as it were. And they gave very powerful arguments that everybody does it. Who cares? They're not robbing anybody. They're not holding anyone up. They're not taking knowledge from anybody else, so to speak. And it was not easy to make the argument you shouldn't cheat on tests. So it might work in the case of adultery. Somebody will be hurt. Although, and by the way, I'm not making a case in either direction here. That becomes obviously more difficult in the case of having a spouse who, let's say, has Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
I will state, though I am a religious individual, that somebody whose spouse has had Alzheimer's for 10 years, 5 years, doesn't even know who they are.
Right.
And went for some love and companionship elsewhere while taking care of that spouse, I don't think I or God are going to judge terribly negatively.
Right. I agree with that.
Okay.
I've actually advised patients accordingly.
Mm-hmm. That, that's interesting.
Yeah. No, and they've been ambivalent. They've been ambivalent. I said, you must, because not only that, it's important for the patient, because you're going to end up with a second patient if you burn out the caretaker.
Well, oh, very good. That's what I think. Exactly. Yeah. Now, by the way, I just want to make another point here that I do believe in moral absolutes. And someone hearing me say what I just said sounds like I believe in moral relativism, but I don't. People get the term moral relativism wrong. Moral relativism means that everybody determines what's right for himself. There is no objective right or wrong.
Or a culture does.
Or a culture does.
Yeah.
Right. Fine. Exactly. Or a culture. Right. But that's what moral relativism is. Moral relativism, though, doesn't mean that the situation doesn't determine morality. Of course it does. You shouldn't lie, but you know, if the Nazi's looking for the Jew, of course you should lie.
Right. So it's the difference between murder is wrong.
And killing can be okay.
Well, murdering without justification.
Yes.
So you have an opportunity to kill Hitler, or I try to kill you today.
That's right.
Murder is wrong. Without justification.
Yes, so. Which is what murder is, really, because if it's with justification, it's killing.
Right.
That's why we have two words.
Right. Interesting. Okay. If you want to get a lot more of this, please join us at the Canyon Grill in Burbank. Again, tickets at drdrew.com.
And it's very limited, the number, so it's a real intimate thing.
That's what I want to say, which is that you will guide our conversation there. I mean, it's not just going to be us going willy-nilly where we find interest. You, the audience, will provoke us or interact with us or go where you'd like us to go. And as you see, we have similar but different approaches. And we end up in the same place from different positions. And I hope we'll disagree on stuff, too. Because
we did here, because I do think God is ultimately necessary and you don't. I mean, there's an example. But the beauty is, you see, it's funny because I just got the PDF, people know what that is, the file. Document file of a piece coming out of mine, which is against people living in their own ethnic neighborhoods.
Mm.
This discussion is a good example of the importance of meeting people who have come to their thoughts in a different way.
Listen,
we can't grow without it.
That's right. It's the Socratic way. I sit in my own thoughts. I'm convinced everything I'm thinking is right until somebody goes, "Hey, douche, think about this."
Yeah, right.
It doesn't. And by the way, I was going to say, it really is. It's interesting. I brought up Socrates at this point. It is the role of teacher. I was very disturbed. I'm going to take us all back about 12 years, back when Tom Cruise was admonishing Matt Lauer on the Today Show about, don't you read books? Don't you read books? I read books. I'm informed because I read books. And I thought to myself, yeah, it's very important to read. But if you don't have teachers in your life, you don't have knowledge. You must have the teachers there provoking your thought, shaping your thought. They are bringing the wisdom, and that's an important word in my thinking, down from the books and incorporating it into perhaps a lexicon of thought. So you don't just take one thing as gospel. You need the teacher there helping you. That's why the iTunes U for me has been so important. I mean, these are people that sit around and think about this all the time. This is why Prager Institute is so important. The people, Prager University, I'm sorry, think about this stuff. They will broaden your perceptions. Of course, yep. Do the reading, but contextualize it and understand it and give new thought to it. You can't do that unless you spend all your time thinking about these things.
And being, as you pointed out, provoked by somebody.
A
and
teacher,
it could be through a book. A teacher could do it through a book, but ideally it's this way. That's why I think that that good interaction on talk radio is invaluable. You know, that people call in. That's why I try to take the call. I take the calls that differ with me first. Mm. And I had one today. It was really funny. I had a guy on, and he really came at me. I mean, respectfully, but like a an 18-wheeler.
Good.
And then at the very out of nowhere, he goes, "You're right." That was the end of the call.
What was he arguing about? What do you want?
Oh, man, I wish I remembered. I don't know. My wife is here. Sue, do you remember that call by any chance? Oh, God, it was precious. I'm going to try to remember because I think you will love this one since this one I love. Because, you know, how many calls can you remember out of 32 years?
I know.
You
know, listen, people say that all the time. I can barely remember what the calls I just
went through. Well, of course, exactly, because you so concentrate on each one that the one an hour ago could have been 17 years
ago. It's literally like telling a golfer, do you remember the stroke you took on the 14th hole?
Do you play golf?
No.
Why the hell did you use that?
I don't know. Well, here's the deal about me. I get very involved in I know that whatever I'm experiencing is deeply influenced by whoever I'm close to. I believe in a lot. I work in the world of co-created experiences. I'm trying to bring people in my work into closeness, into proximity, because addicts are cut off. And so I've developed this part of my brain that's deeply invested in your right brain. So I'm constantly picking stuff up. And even what your body's experiencing in the moment, I'll start to feel. It's a very weird experience when you really get into it, but it helps people feel attuned in a close relationship. And so that's the world I work in.
Well, that you do it well, obviously. So here was a call in my first years of radio, and I'm very open about sexual subjects as well, and I remember. So I was talking about men seeing women as men visually aroused, mm-hmm. much more so than women.
Yep.
I mean, to me, that's like saying 2 and 2 is 4.
Well, we have functional MRI now. I can tell you all about it that documents all of
that. Well, I always loved that. You know, somehow before functional MRI,
you knew.
I think we had an idea. Okay. So, although I'm very happy to know that, I will now tell my next caller who doubts it.
Yeah.
The next. So, anyway, a guy calls up and he goes, you know, Dennis, I'm sorry. That's a little sexist. I'm not turned on at all by photos like that. I said, well, first, let me just ask you, are you heterosexual or homosexual? Because if he was gay, then I would have talked to him about
gay images.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sure.
But he was heterosexual. So finally, I realized I had one more chance here. Because I knew in my gut the guy is not trying to fool me. I think he was trying to fool himself. And either for religious or moral or psychological reasons, couldn't admit what I think is the obvious. So finally I said, well, let me just ask you something. If I showed you a picture of a beautiful woman naked and a great Mack truck, would you have a similar response? And to my shock, he said, I see what you mean.
Oh, he didn't even get it.
Interesting. It took a truck.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Well, let me tell you about the function. You'll love this functional MRI stuff. It was done down at Emory a while ago, and they gave visual sexual images to men and women, and they put them in the scanner. I got to go in. I did the scanner myself. I went down to interview the researcher and went in the scanner and looked at my brain in response to this stuff too. It was really interesting. And just as a sidebar, they show you homosexual images too, and I'm, I am, you know, to me, I'm very, I don't, I'm very open about this stuff. To me, sexual orientation is just what it is. It's I kind of know where it comes from. I know what it is, and I God bless people that have that. But your brain is a male brain. My brain, my amygdala fired off with a threat response, which I found very interesting.
At a gay image.
At a gay image. And I had no conscious experience whatsoever. If anything, maybe a little sort of aesthetically pleasing, like nice image of a male. I mean, that's fine.
Was he fully naked with the genitalia exposed?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And my brain and the researcher goes, oh, this is what men, this is how men respond to this. They have these threat response. I go, whoa. That's where some of the biases come from and things. It's very interesting.
That is interesting. That the same region that lights up with a threat?
Yes.
Lit up with a good-looking naked man?
Yes. As though I was looking at an aggressor or something.
I wonder if my boredom response would light up.
I don't know.
I would be very I agree with you. I love you for doing that. I love knowing me. I would like to know. I don't care if turned on, I would be curious.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't care. I would be curious what part of my brain, if any, lit up.
So here's the big thing that they showed in the differences in the firing of men and women. Men pretty much all fired the same. There's a pretty universal firing.
Yes, exactly.
That when you see a sexual image,
that's right.
You have
correct
arousal and appetite of desire.
That's right.
And those are two different things, right? That's I like that, and I want to have that. Those are the two things that go off in a male.
That's correct.
Well, in the women, there was a spectrum of responses, but the predominant response was pure arousal, no desire. So women in women's brains, appetite of desire and sexual arousal, like, ooh, I like that, and I want it, are separated.
Oh, how interesting.
In men, they don't separate. And so when a woman says to a man, hey, I dress like this provocatively because, hey, it's for me. It makes me feel good. A man goes, don't you know what that does to me? And she goes, you beast. You should why is that? How do you – so based on your understanding of women, how do you imagine you would reliably turn on appetite of desire?
In a woman?
In a woman. The images don't do it. Some of them they do. Some of them they do, about 20% or so.
Showing up with an E-Class Mercedes doesn't hurt.
Well, keep going. They couldn't actually do that in this study.
So you mean in terms of a picture?
No, an experience.
That would turn on a woman?
Yep. Let's ask your wife. What would it be?
Is the guy funny?
Well, that's the zone. So intimate conversation. It turns out
an
intimate conversation. Is that Sue? Does that fit with you a little bit? Sue's more in the
Sue. I'll say it in front of her. A foreplay with Sue is to talk about tax issues. it's different. I had to retrain my brain, but it's very exciting.
Well, she's turned on by intellect. She's turned
totally.
On by
yes, and, she is. But it's atypical.
I'm an evolutionary biologist. I'm a biologist, so evolutionary thought is deep meaning for me. So that makes sense from an evolutionary perspective, right? You'd want to collect genes that have cognitive capacity. Makes sense. But from the standpoint of arousal and desire, desires in a female is activated with intimate conversation. So I tell my sons, I go, hey, dude, go date and sit and listen and have intimate contact. And lo and behold, intimacy is very healthy for human development.
Well, I love it. So it's really ironic because I love intimate conversation. And whenever possible, she will direct it toward social policy.
Well, for her, that's intimate conversation.
Is that right?
Yeah. Right? Kind of. Sort of. That's really funny.
By the way, she did remember what the guy who said on the show today.
Oh, yeah.
You're right. So this guy, so he calls up and he says, I was talking about the need for Christian and Jewish clergy to come out and speak out against Islamic terror because it's having a horrible impact on religion generally, not just on perceptions of Islam, but general. People think, look at all this evil done in God's name.
Speak out against Islamic terror.
Yeah.
Not Islamicism.
Not Islamic terror. Just like there's Italian terror, that was fascism, and German terror.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean all Germans or all Japanese. I mean, it should go without saying, but if it needs to be said, that's fine.
Yeah.
So the guy calls. He was a Christian guy. He said, you know, we're just taught to love, not judge. I said, what are you talking about? I said, and finally I kept pushing. I said, wait. So do you judge Boko Haram? You know, this group that just...
Yeah, took the girls.
Yes, and has been burning boys alive and mass slaughter for years. Finally, I've been talking about them for years. Finally, the world knows about them. So he finally said, oh, yeah, you're right. Because he himself said, so wait a minute, do you condemn Boko Haram? He said, of course. I said, well, isn't that a judgment?
Yeah.
And he says, you know, and then he said, well, only God judges. And I said, what do you mean only God judges? Anyway, aren't we supposed to be like God? God judges, but we don't? That doesn't mean, you see, people, the trick is to know who to judge. I knew before I was ever married, I never judged marital behavior. I mean, unless it was publicly humiliating of a spouse, then I would judge that. But let's say if I found out he or she had an affair, this is before I was ever married, and I didn't marry till 32, so I had a period of time to think about this. I just knew there's a lot more going on in most cases than just some awful spouse.
Of course. Of course. Now, once somebody becomes, if they become truly awful, we can judge.
Agree. Totally. Yes. But we don't know the private awfulness.
Right. The circumstance.
Adultery is a public awfulness, but we don't know the private.
Absolutely. And these are interpersonal, very human endeavors, and they have human solutions. And to not judge can be useful, in fact, especially when you're treating these people.
Oh, well, you have no choice. I mean, you can't sit there.
Well, I can say get out of there. I can say get out. This isn't going to get better. Get out. This is untreatable. That's a judgment. And this is just a bad situation. It needs to stop and separate. That's that. As opposed to this is an interesting
Well,
so problem.
I'll ask you a question because I have a beef to pick with therapists. And I just want to say I'm very pro-therapy. I just don't think a lot of them do it right. In other words, in terms of competence, not because they don't want to. It's a very hard thing to do right. I mean, let's be honest. Most artists aren't great, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here's a beef that I'd love to get your reaction to. I have written for 20 years now about something I learned through speaking and radio, what I call an epidemic in the United States of adult children who don't speak to a parent.
Who don't speak to their parents.
Yes.
So who abandon their role as son or daughter.
Yes.
Okay.
It won't call, won't write, won't let them visit their grandchildren, even in many cases.
Okay.
And we all know that there are certain cases where it might be warranted.
Right.
Where you have an evil, a truly evil parent whose very existence is pathologic to the child.
Yeah.
I think that's quite rare. I know it exists. I think it's rare. And I've covered this on my show, and I think that the vast majority of cases of a child who does not speak to a parent is doing something wrong, is doing something morally wrong. And so everyone that I've had on the show called in, I say, so have you been to a therapist? Yes. What does your therapist think? My therapist is totally on board that I don't speak to my mother or my father.
Did they put any time limit on that, like for a while or forever?
Oh, that's very interesting.
That's important.
Good. You're right. It is. And I will pose that next time I raise the issue.
Okay. And as usual, I approach things from a health perspective. And so what I would say to that person, while I agree with you, it's in some cosmic sense not good for children to forsake their parents. I mean, that's not good with a capital G. That's not my job. What I would say is for you need to do for yourself to feel whole and good about yourself, to do what you need to be. You need to relate to your parent in such a way as to do what you need to do to be, say I'm talking to me, to be a good son. You need to do that for yourself. Now, your mother or your father may benefit, and you may find some richer territory there. But for right now, as you've left for a while, now you're going back. Like it was somehow destructive in some way. You've looked at that relationship. Now you're ready to go back. You've got a secure base with your therapist. This is how I'd approach this. You need to do this for you. You're not being a good son. And that can't feel good. There has to be a deep emptiness associated with that. It's a piece of who we all are. You know, the lifespan is what it is as part of the human condition. And being a son is part of being a person. And you need to do what you do to be, for yourself, to be a good son. Think about what that is. That's how I'd approach it.
Well, this is a good example of us coming to a similar conclusion from a
different perspective. Yeah.
Which is, if your thing works, and I believe it would in many cases, I think that's great. Mine is more of back to the Ten Commandments.
Do what's good.
It says honor. Do what's good.
Yeah.
It says honor your father and mother. It doesn't say if you like them.
Yeah.
And I point out, by the way, there's no law to love your parents. There's a law to honor your parents, but not love them.
Yeah. Which is interesting.
Yes.
So I think, you know, listen, there's so much. Wisdom's an important word to me. I want to get – we haven't even gotten to where I want to go with you, which is wisdom in philosophy and in spirit – in scriptures and things like that. There's proscriptions in these instruments that end up being the same as things we do from a health perspective. This all been available
one
to us
would,
forever.
Well, one would hope so.
It's true.
Otherwise,
it's
not a wise document.
But how to get people to adopt and whatnot. I have my own sort of thoughts about how you get from – A to Z, particularly when people these days have been through trauma. You know, our families are such a mess and kids go through such horrible trauma that they don't trust anything and they don't find value in it. In fact, right now, I got to go to break in a second, but let me just finish with this, that we're hitting – it's gotten really bad of late where people that work in addiction – I've not been as active in the addiction field lately as I have been the last 20 years – but my colleagues that are there are complaining that the young people that they're treating, literally have no reason to get sober. When they say, what do you want to do? What's your passion? They go, I don't know. Well, do you want to sit in the above your dad's garage your whole life and get high? Well, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do is their response. Can you imagine? Not, what do you want? What's your passion? If you get well, I mean, think you can have relationships. I don't know, man. What do you want me? What do you want me to do? Pretty scary stuff.
Well, I'd love to hear your take on it.
All right, back with a break. Before I get a break, I want to remind everyone about our friends at GoToMeeting. Relationships, that's what I'm talking about so often here in this program. It's very hard, though, to get a team together. That's why we use GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. Simple way to meet everyone online from anywhere, anytime. And we love GoToMeeting. We use it all the time here. In fact, anytime we're establishing a relationship with a new sponsor, it's GoToMeeting, everybody. GoToMeeting, HD Faces by Citrix. You can share the same screen to review documents, work on one another's documents. Just turn on your cameras and you have a high-definition video conference with your webcam. You'll see each other face-to-face in real time. Anywhere, Mac, PC, tablet, smartphone, it's all going to work. So, start hosting your own face-to-face online meeting today with GoToMeeting. Try it free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com today. Click the Try It Free button. Use the promo code Dr. Drew, D-R-D-R-E-W. That's GoToMeeting.com, promo code Dr. Drew, Dr. Drew. Be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And this week, on This Week with Larry Miller, I tell you how I don't like being scared. I never have and I never will. If Godzilla is tough, I hope he also smiles. Join us and listen for free through iTunes or visit LarryMillerPodcast.com. We'll see you here.
Thursday, May 29th, from the producer of Scrubs and Cougar Town comes the new comedy, Undateable.
I could probably be all over you, like kiss me and like touch me, and you wouldn't do anything because you're my friend, right?
Yeah, no.
They might be stuck in the friend zone now, but every underdog has his day.
Sweetie, are you okay? Are you having a little stroke?
Got a fine life, a force of...
Chris D'Elia stars in the premiere of Undateable, Thursday, May 29th, followed by Last Comic Standing on NBC.
Is this the new one?
Yes, this is from the new album.
This is the new one. This is the quality of sound. Please always use this one when I ask for number three, because this was what I was looking for. This is the kind of sound I was looking for. So, Dennis Prager, Dennis and I have an event on May 31st, 8 o'clock, Canyon Grill in Burbank. 25% discount if you go to the podcast. Where do they go? Dr. Drew.com?
Yes.
And use the code DREW25, D-R-E-W-2-5. DennisPrager.com is a website for Dennis, and PragerUniversity.com is where you can continue to learn about many of the topics we're discussing here. I will discuss on Saturday, but you will guide the conversation, and we will dig deep. So what do we do with these young people that are drifting?
Well, I just want to say that's a very scary thing you just...
Yes, it is. It troubles me all the time.
See, it would appear that what you and I took for granted exists in everybody, and especially males, is ambition. But your example of you're sitting, you know, you're in this little room above your father's garage getting high all day, and the 25 or 30-year-old, I assume we're talking about...
Yeah, 25 and under now, we're seeing.
All right, fine. 25 and under says, what do you want me to do? So the natural, what we thought
and
was
by the
a
way,
natural
it's a rhetorical question.
Yes, exactly.
He doesn't really want to be told.
Oh, that's a good point. Because if you told him, it wouldn't make any difference.
He wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I want you to actually make something of your life. Those words would not mean anything. Is that the point you're making?
Those words. What do you want me to do?
No, I want you to make something of your life.
They don't know. They have zero desire, motivation, passion, whatever that is, no motor. It's like an idol.
Well, are we built with a motor and it was destroyed, or motors have to be made and we're not built with them? What do you think?
I always try to base my opinions in objective fact, and I don't think we have the information yet. What do I think? Probably destroyed. Probably somehow a combination of the chemistry of addiction taking over and the excessive – I mean, we need to – you know, Adam, I'm sure on your events with Adam, he talked about grit and getting kids that to want to do and grit and
well,
go through
Adam
adversity.
Has an oversized motor. No, he right. does, and I relate
right.
to that, and
me
I understand
yeah.
it. But,
yeah.
but you know, I don't – it didn't come from his parents.
No, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
He came from him looking at them going, I don't want to do that.
That's right. So.
But there is a growing body of data that suggests that children need to overcome adversity in their life. They need to be given opportunity and then the opportunity to struggle with it as opposed to things being handed and spoon-fed to them or being given ribbons and trophies for shit they didn't do. So this idea of us over-gratifying – and by the way, I don't blame the kids for that. We're the ones doing it. It's our narcissism that we can't tolerate our kids' disappointment, that we can't let them be disappointed. That's our narcissism, not the kids.
I give you my word of honor. I would swear on a stack of books by Karl Marx and Bibles. But I would that I remember when my kids played on little league type teams. I remember thinking, do I want their team to win or lose? And the part of me that just wants my kid to feel good wanted them to win. The part of me that wanted my kid to become a happier adult wanted them to lose.
Right. That's good. Which one won?
When they lost. I didn't have a choice. Okay. I mean, it's a Prager tradition. We all on losing teams. But I was happy that they lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's something that most parents don't have. They don't even have that dichotomy in them. They just go right for, I can't tolerate my kid feeling bad.
Which is a form of paralysis.
Yeah.
Because that kid above the father's garage is paralyzed.
Yeah. Their knees are knocked out. I mean, I think a lot of us, if you ever saw kids that had funds, things like that. It's a very similar kind of phenomenon. Remember kids with like trust funds and things? I remember seeing that kind of thing happen to kids when I was growing up. And this is that, but it's pervasive.
Well, the truth is it's harder to raise kids in affluence than in poverty. Hmm. My parents were raised in poverty, and it was they just knew from the outset we either eat by working or we don't eat. But that kid above the garage is not, he knows it's not a dilemma.
Well, he knows that.
He'll either, forgive me, he'll either be fed by his father
right.
or by society.
That's right. That's right. So there's no, what, instinct? There's no desire, you know, survival.
What's
desire.
There to overcome?
I mean, ultimately, it starts with survival, right? That's the ultimate motivator.
Yeah, right. But it's interesting, too. I had another motivator because I didn't grow up in poverty. I grew up in the middle of the middle of the middle class. I always say that. You know, I grew up, my father had Oldsmobiles, which was right in the middle of the GM. It was, you know, you were rich Cadillac, second rich Buick, third Olds, fourth.
That's funny.
You know, that was the fourth Pontiac, that, fifth Chevrolet. That. Yeah. That's how it worked. So we were Oldsmobile. That was how we were raised, and I wanted something else. Since I wasn't afraid of starving, I wanted to win a woman. And that was a huge motivator for me to become a productive male.
Do you think – let me throw a balloon out there, or push a balloon out is it possible that all this extreme porn and availability of pornography is somehow diminishing that?
That's a very interesting question. It's not that – you see, the reason that I don't think that that's the thing is that when I grew up, we didn't have that, but we – look, the issue isn't pornography. The issue is self-satisfying – sexually, meaning masturbation. But so I think boys masturbated.
Sure, but it's so – what they're looking at is so extreme, so gratifying. I talk to a lot of young males, and here's what I hear. What I hear is, I want a girlfriend, but girls are kind of a hassle, and I got my porn. I'm all right.
Nobody said that in
our room. No, you never heard that.
But I don't even understand that. I don't get that in this – being with a real – forgetting – morality, forgetting humanity, just sexually. I don't get it from a male. I think I know men, and I don't get it from a male perspective. You rather satisfy yourself than be with a woman?
I don't think rather.
You will find it comparably satisfying?
Not even comparably, but it does. It diminishes. I'm saying it maybe turns the volume down a little bit on guys' drive. Maybe. I don't know. It's hard to believe, but I wonder if it's having an effect.
Then I'll argue a different thing, though. Okay. Maybe the utter – what I think has changed the most is not even that. After all, I grew up, there was Playboy.
Yeah.
What has changed is the women.
It's the availability of
sex. Yes, you don't have to work to get a woman.
You just go on Tinder. You know, there's an app. You just, boom, somebody's available
now.
In just
show up. Yes.
Yeah, somebody's ready for you in your neighborhood.
And I'm talking free.
Yeah.
So,
no, David, you know what Tinder is?
It's an
app where you go, I want to have sex now. I'm at this address. And four people go, I'm available. Yeah.
Tinder?
Yeah.
Just kidding. No, that's... Okay. All right.
So
fine.
It might be that. Maybe it's that.
I think more than porn. I think I had to. I and all males prior to me from Adam or whoever you wish to have as the first man had to work to get a woman.
Yeah.
You don't today.
Interesting. Yeah. You guys. Is Gary? Is that make? Is this? These guys are young. So I'm wondering if any of this makes any sense. Is this at all? We're a couple old guys speculating.
No, you guys are right.
Is that true?
Yeah.
That's huge.
You say it matter-of-factly.
You'd
argue with us. It's
no,
a big deal.
I mean, I think that some of my peers might argue with you, but I agree with you.
And you're on the higher, older spectrum of this. If you were 17 living in this, who the hell knows?
Oh, I'm so desperately scared for my nephew who's 8.
Right,
I mean,
right.
He's got an HD video camera in his pocket right now and will forever. We're hurting.
So something's going on.
But I think since that was a big factor in my – where I remember thinking – I learned a number of languages. And I remember thinking, you know –
it'll impress.
This is going to impress women.
Yeah, sure.
And it did impress women, by the way.
I still think guys think that way. They do. But it may not have the same power that it
did.
But
you don't have to now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get a woman, you get a girl by being male. That's it. You breathe. You've conquered.
It's not that bleak. It's not that bleak. Because there's still relationship. People are still having
relationships. You're right. Of course, look, in a country of 300 million people, you're going to have a lot of variety of human experiences. Yeah. But you were describing.
But it's something. It's something you've helped me, actually.
Yeah. This has been very helpful for me to understand, to work through what's going on.
I think there's the context socially of what's going on. But I think ultimately, I believe deeply that is the impoverishment of our relationships with our family. That's where it starts. That we're and we talked about the narcissism and giving them gifts. That's an impoverished relationship with a parent. It is making a kid happy all the
time.
Which,
by the way, is exacerbated. And I was divorced, so there's no holier than thou judgment here. But it is exacerbated by divorce in this way.
Yep.
The parents think that I put them through a divorce. Now I'll spoil them.
I feel guilty, so I have to. I can't tolerate making them more uncomfortable.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. It's a serious thing going on right now. Dennis, I want to take a couple of quick calls. There's one for you up there. You may or may not want to answer this.
I'll answer anything.
Well, here you go. This is Scott 30 of San Francisco. Scott?
Hey, guys. Let me just say what a honor and a privilege it is to be speaking to you both. At the same time, it's kind of amazing. You've both been just such a huge, huge influence in my life since I was 12 years old.
Fantastic. That's cool.
That's nice.
So I do feel a little weird asking Dennis this question, but my curiosity has got the better of me. I just have to know if he has ever smoked pot.
I had pot once in my life, and it was baked into a brownie. The reason that I didn't smoke at that time was that though I've smoked a pipe and cigars since I was 15, I've never inhaled. This is not Clintonian. It's a fact. I don't know how to inhale. I would choke. So my friend said... I was in my late 20s, and friends of mine said, Dennis, we're dying to know what's really under that happy, ebullient exterior. We want to get to the real Dennis, and aren't you curious what a marijuana high would be? I said, you're right. I'm willing to see what's behind this ebullient, outgoing exterior. So they baked it in a brownie, which apparently is pretty powerful. I have no idea.
Yeah, the eating is more intense.
Okay, exactly. And all I did was become more of this. I just sat
there
talking.
Did you talk more?
I talked nonstop.
They all ran out.
And it was before I had a radio show. I was basically doing a talk show with people around me.
I'm so interested in how the pot is now, the kind of pot they have. I would actually try it if I were in a legal state. But I would get panic attacks. It can make panic attacks really bad. So I'd be fearful.
Well, I want to say to Scott, I hated the pot culture then. I hate it today. I think that in California, the equation on billboards that I saw from the Department of Health of California equating tobacco and drugs, forget marijuana, and drugs, was one of the most irresponsible lies that I have heard in my life. And so I did it once. I wanted to know what it was like. I wanted to answer their questions. But I don't understand the desire to mess around with your brain. I don't get it.
Thanks, Scott.
You know, Dennis, I'm standing here with my dad, who's been listening to you for over 30 years, and he is nodding feverishly.
You see, Scott? You see?
I love your dad. Give him a big hug for me.
And, I'm doing it right now.
And are you living right above his garage?
That's right.
Just
it's
joking.
Converted attic.
Thanks, Guy. Good call.
Okay, that clarifies.
Let's talk to Paul, 29. Paul, what's up? That's funny.
Hey, Dr. Drew, how you doing?
Good.
You know, you spoke at Northwestern University, I think about a year ago, and a couple of bald guys bought you dinner that night at Omega. Do you remember that, Dennis?
Dennis.
Oh, I thought you were talking to Dr. Drew.
I'm
sorry. I'm sorry. Yes, I do remind.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm the shorter bald guy.
Well, good to meet you again.
Yeah. No, Dr. Drew, my question for you, but also for Dennis, is that ironically enough, I ended up going to Northwestern University. I'm going to finish my bachelor's soon, and I was dead set on a PhD. program, I spoke to my professor, who I respect very much, and he told me that I should consider a PsyD program because of the psychology is more of an art or more of a science kind of fight I have within myself. And I'm wondering if Dr. True gave more credence to a PhD or a PsyD.
I love the PsyD. I've worked with and hired many PsyDs in the programs I've worked with, and they tend to be exceptionally well clinically trained. So if you know you want to be a clinician and work with patients, I love the PsyD. PhD is much more of an abstract research-based, can be anyway, research-based discipline. So if I had any question at all, I would aim towards the PsyD if I wanted to be a clinician. Make sense?
It does, yeah. No, you know what? That's basically what I wanted to hear.
All right, buddy. Take care now. Let's go now to Cause. Cause?
Yes, how are you?
Good, what's up?
I called on a good day because I happen to be a 34-year-old with a lack of ambition and a lack of love for my parents.
Wow,
you fit. That's why I called.
Well, no, let us probe you a little bit before we answer your question. Any questions for him?
So, a lack of ambition and a lack of love for your parents?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's a double whammy. And Dr. Drew's point about linking the two, I had never thought about. It's a good example of learning from you. And I do have thoughts, but you wanted to ask, I think, to probe a little
more. All
right.
Well, I would say that, first of all, when I'm talking to a given individual, it's treacherous to generalize. So I'm gonna avoid going into our. We've been talking in sweeping generalities so far in this show, but let's talk about you as a specific. You sound depressed. So do you have?
Well, yeah.
Okay. So depression may be the reason, or at least affecting why you have no oomph, no desire, no willingness, no libido. Really, is what that is. Okay, so yeah. I would think maybe you want to get that depression looked at, number one. Number two, I saw on the board, which is now not up there anymore, gentlemen, that you had some trauma with your parents. Tell me about that, your mom.
Not necessarily trauma, I don't think, but, I guess so. Mom.
As every trauma survivor, they don't ever see the trauma as trauma. So go ahead, your mom.
I've been listening to you for years, and what my mom tells me kind of goes against everything that I know from you.
So go ahead.
She was a heavy drinker for between 5 and 10 years, I would say, throughout my childhood and teenage years.
Yeah.
It got so bad that she lost her job because she was drunk on the job. She got 2 DUIs.
Yeah.
Really bad.
Yeah.
And very dependent. Okay. And after she had to serve some community service and time, like weekends in prison or whatever that program is.
Yeah.
She calmed down.
Okay.
And again, listening to you, I tried to help her. She never really wanted to do the meetings. She kind of stopped on her own, but she will still drink from time to time. And she says she doesn't have the desire to drink. She basically claims she's not an alcoholic. She never was.
Okay.
It was just a period. And I wondered.
So let's talk about that. Alcoholism comes in many different flavors. And some people can control it, even if they've gone through a period when they lose control. Most people who lose control need treatment. She was able to control it and does control it now. That may be a combination of her genetic burden. A certain amount of alcoholism is caused by the amount of certain genetic mechanisms. And some people explode with alcoholism, can't control it, need treatment. Other people are kind of in and out. Some of it may be environment and frontal lobe function, executive function. She may have sort of not have too much of what we call hypofrontality, where the frontal part of the brains that help us contain behaviors drifts downward. Hers is still intact. She is likely to have trouble again. That's likely. She also has all the discontent and all the irritability and rage and stuff that I'm sure that she had when she was drinking. And so you get to be the beneficiary of all that. But she is controlling her drinking. That's for sure. That doesn't make her not an alcoholic. Is she open to any kind of therapy or anything?
Not really. I mean, she has tried, but she's never, grasped onto it.
Yeah, and so I'm sure you see the negativity and the blaming and all that stuff, right?
May I ask,
please, go ahead.
Kaz, how old are you?
34.
And you're not? Are you working now?
Yes, I am.
You work 5 days a week?
Yes.
So you spoke of a lack of ambition. What does that mean exactly? Since you do get up every day to go to work, that entails a certain degree of ambition.
It's better than my patience.
Well, it's better than the guy you described.
Yeah, way better. Yeah. So I'd give anything to get him to where you are.
Right, exactly. Go on.
Yeah, I guess it could be much worse. My ambition, I guess, is to just remain an independent person. You know, I don't want to rely on moving back in with my mom. I at least want to be able to.
All right. Well, that's huge. All right. Well, by the way, that's huge.
That's ambitious.
Yes. Yes. So don't sell yourself too short. Number two.
Well, I guess
do you want to get married?
I would love to. Yeah.
Well, that's ambition. Maybe you. I'm not saying this to bolster your self-esteem. That's not my mode of approaching these things. So please understand that. I'm just asking. The reality is you seek to become and remain independent of your mother, which is huge. You seek to bond with a woman and make a home. So when you say lack of ambition, what does that mean? You don't want to be president? What does that mean exactly?
I suppose maybe a better word would be passion. Like, I don't have a particular career.
Well, it is a better word.
Yeah.
Well, okay. How do you develop passion? Passion's key. Yeah. I'll do a heretical thing, and have you, and I don't believe this is the be-all and end-all, it's just one arena of life, but it's not inconsequential to many people. Have you ever tried religion?
No. I mean, I grew up around it a little bit, but I became atheist in seventh grade and never looked back. Hmm.
All right. I don't think you'll agree, Doc, but I think this is addressed to
he's wagging his finger at me.
No, I'm not. I'm moving it back and forth, but I'm not wagging it.
I see. It was a wag that went between us.
I think that atheism in people can have doesn't necessarily have a dispiriting effect.
Sure.
To truly, he didn't say agnostic. He said atheist. That means he is certain there is no God. So if there is no God, there are a lot of consequences. Then ultimately, needless to say, there's nothing after we die. It's all a crapshoot. The fact that I'm here is a total fluke. I will die, be forgotten. It's like it never happened. I think that these things help undermine passion. I know that there are passionate atheists. And I don't mean passionate just about atheism. Passionate about
Adam, although he barely has a pulse.
I think Adam is a fluke in many ways. Now he would say that.
I mean, looking
from where he came,
yeah.
And I don't know if he would say atheist now or agnostic. I would be curious. I'm going to push him the next time we're together on that. I would be curious. What are you?
I was just thinking about what you said that and what you were qualifying. I'm a little more complicated. I definitely believe in something bigger than me, for sure. I believe that if you were going to call, you know, some physical property in the universe like energy, God, I'm all in. And if you talk about it, you'll be talking about the same thing that I.
But you might or might not.
I don't anthropomorphize. To me, that gets silly.
Yeah. All right. Then I'm silly. I do anthropomorphize.
I know. No. To me, that's
Anthropomorphize means that God is personal and not just an impersonal power.
Yeah.
So,
believing in things bigger than yourself is important.
Yes, it is.
And having
that's right.
faith, then
right.
faith is a different concept, and you got to have faith.
Right.
For all of this, you have to have faith.
See the what? Cause one more question, because this was. I think it was helpful to you. If nothing else, then to realize your issue is passion, not ambition.
Yeah.
And that's a very important distinction and that you came to, and I'm going to this has given me, you know, I've gotten like five shows out of today. You got to have me off more often.
Well, I want to remind people.
I'm going to pay you to come
Well, no,
on.
I want to remind people that they show up at the Canyon Grill and we will go all over. I didn't even get to what I wanted to talk about
that's
today,
which funny,
was philosophy.
Which was hockey.
Philosophy. I'm deeply interested in Western philosophy, and I know you'll have a ton of thought about that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Kaz, I'll leave with this because I wish
we got to go.
Yeah. I just want to say, I'm a behaviorist. I believe that you induce passion through behavior as much as passion will induce behavior. So you start doing things, and something will then trigger a passion. If it is serving this country in some way, if it is serving a fellow human beings in some organized way, if it is collecting coins, I'm not even telling you what it should be, but start doing things other than watching TV at night.
Yeah.
That's a passion killer.
And I would even add in, do it with others. As you mentioned, service. When people are get better from addiction, again, we're having trouble getting people to do any of these things. We know we're advocating exactly what you're advocating. So we say, act as if.
That's
act
right.
as if you
That's
had
right.
passion.
Yeah. I tell people who can't believe, act as if there's a God.
Yeah. Act as if. Find a spiritual connection. As again, even if it's crazy like mine and very involved and stuff, whatever it is, find it and have faith in it. And number three, be of service. Be with other people in some fashion. In some fashion, pay homage to others in some way.
But
even though it's just tying their
don't
shoes.
Don't go home after work and watch TV.
Except HLM, my program, 9 o'clock.
Except that, but you could record it.
I totally agree with you. So again, here we are again, not disagreeing, but agreeing through from
right.
different places.
That's and fascinating.
Same, which is I didn't. That does not surprise me. The human experience is what it is.
And start dating women.
But what's nice is we speak a different language, and
yes,
people are going to understand
right.
this in different ways.
That's and so exactly right.
Show up on May 31st. We're going to get and I want to get much more into. I got a ton of questions about Epictetus and about Kant and about
I have no answers
Hobbes
about Epictetus.
Okay.
None.
All right, good.
Sounds like a disease
to
me.
The,
you know, he
Stoics.
Has advanced Epictetus.
I'm going to skip the Stoics. That's a Woody Allen thing. He has a whole – did you read Without Feathers?
Yeah.
So, okay.
All of his books.
All right, so there we go. So Dennis Prager, myself, May 31st. This is just a tiny hint. This is our warm-up so we can really get in big when we go to the event next week. We'll see you guys there. And until next time, it's Dr. Podcast. We'll see you next time.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. This is Corolla Digital.